Hi, nerds. I'm Michael Moore, hosting this podcast for Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I'm here with David Johnson, IT manager at OTJ Architects. Hi, David. How's it going?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm doing awesome. Before we get into the segment we usually get into, what is OTJ Architects?
So OTJ Architects is an architect firm based out of DC, but we have offices all throughout the US. Award-winning, they do really, really good work. I myself can barely draw a stick figure. However, I can handle all their IT concerns. So that's why they have me on board.
Awesome. Well, that's fantastic. All right, we'll dive in a little bit in more than a second, but we start off with our icebreaker segment usually, and it is called Random Access Memories. I ask a question and then you respond to whatever comes to your head first. It's a fun thing, so enjoy it. Your first question is, if you could have any office tool as a pet, what would it be? And what would you name it?
Any office tool as a pet?
Yep.
Oh my goodness, nothing comes to mind. I want a very comfortable spinning chair, like as a pet.
The chair?
Yeah. And this is very weird, but the idea that I want a chair is because, like, I have dogs, and, you know, dogs are, like, cuddly. Like, a dog will come up, cuddle you, like, sit under you. Like, if I have a chair, I imagine it's that, but times, like, 10, more comfortable.
It's funny because I usually have a different chair than the one I'm in right now, but I had to swap it out because it was starting to come apart, right? You're sitting in chairs too much. So I just recently swapped out my chair. There you go. If you had an office tool as a pet, it would be a chair, right?
Or sentient chair.
A sentient chair. And would you say you would name it?
I'm terrible with names. I don't know. It'd probably be something dumb like cherry or like blue, like it'd be the color. It'd be something lame.
No, I like cherry. Actually, that was really good. That's a good one. We're going to go with that. Cherry, the sentient chair. I love it. What is the most inspiring or motivating IT-related quote or slogan that you've heard or read?
So it's 100% not IT-oriented, but it's actually on my LinkedIn as a little background. But it's Winston Churchill. Is that success is born from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. And I love that quote. I'm sure if anybody's been in IT long enough, it's almost like when you're writing your first few PowerShell scripts and it fails every single time and then it finally works and it's, you know, you fail 1,000 times to succeed once and you just can't lose any of the enthusiasm. So I love that quote.
I love that quote too. I actually have a little quote book where I write down quotes. So I actually might add that to my quote book. So that's a good one. Repeat that again for everybody again so that they have it. Cause I do love that.
So if I'm not mistaken, it is Winston Churchill. It's success is going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm.
I love that. I love it. That's a great quote. I appreciate it. All right. What is the most amazing IT-related demonstration or presentation that you've seen or given?
So this is a fun one, and then it will also be corny. It's most of my answers. So I used to work in Apple back in the day, and at Apple, they had these things called, like, creatives, and the creatives, like, train people. So my wife worked at Apple with me. We worked at the same store together, and she was a creative, so she did the training. And one day there was this older couple and they came in to learn. The wife wanted to learn numbers and the husband wanted to learn. I don't even remember what the husband wanted to learn, but we didn't have a second creative. So all the staff thought it would be cute if the married couple trained the other married couple. So, like, I did a training with my wife and we trained this, and they had to be like in their 70s. Like, they didn't have anything to do. They probably were retired. They probably were just, you know, getting out and learning. She trained numbers, which, you know, is Apple's versions of Excel. So that's exciting. Maybe it was GarageBand I did with the, like, I trained the wife, she trained the husband. So it was it was, you know, cute and adorable. And yes.
That is actually adorable. Well, that's pretty cool. I actually really like that. I'm sure they had a blast learning all that stuff.
Yeah. And then everybody that worked with us made a huge deal. They were very extra. It was terrible.
Did they like take like pictures and post them
Yes,
around? And yeah.
it like everyone was like ooh, and it was like a freaking TV child show. Like it was terrible, but it was a good experience, right?
I love it. I love it. Now, well, speaking of that, we were kind of chatting a little bit earlier, prior to this, and you had mentioned that you have kind of a passion for training and development, right? So that kind of leads in really well. I didn't plan that transition. That was fantastic. I love it when things do it like that. I'm sure when you were training her, you were actually in your element as well, right? What do you think is sometimes I think when we talk about training and when projects are created and stuff, so training is kind of an afterthought, right? Why do you think that people think that training should be something that is an afterthought towards the end? Why do you think that happens?
I think it happens because so much of our time is built towards getting to a goal. And training can be a hard topic because a lot of time training is breaks. Like it to most people, especially if you're not good at it and you don't know how to master it and do it slows things down. It's like, oh, we got to do a week of training. But what about the person that doesn't know how to code on a computer? Or what about the brand new tech? Or what about the intern? Like when you hear it, all you hear is obstacles. All you hear are things that you have to overcome, things that could potentially slow you down. But I just think you got to be solution oriented. And those aren't hard things. Those aren't challenges. Those are fun opportunities. Like those are things that you overcome, and then you get the joy of overcoming them. So I think that's why training is typically seen last, and it's something that a lot of people don't tend to enjoy. Because they just see it as breaks. It's going to slow us down. It's going to stop us from getting to our goal at this time when it doesn't have to be that. If anything, it can accelerate you to your goal. You can build out champions. You can give people better skill sets. It helps with retention. Like if you train people and get them trained, they feel loyal. Like it's the benefits outweigh any downsides you could pitch at me. But so, ramble, but that's the answer.
No, you're allowed to ramble on a podcast. We don't like dead air. No, I was thinking about that, and it's funny because I was going to ask you what are the benefits, and you got there before I could ask it to you. I think that when we're talking about training, and you mentioned so many of those benefits and stuff like that, there also seems to be a lack of training on how to train.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't know how to say that any other way, but I feel like sometimes people don't understand the right way to train. And it's not like there's one right way to train, right?
Yeah.
It's different methods, it's different ways, and also it depends on the content you're training, and it depends on the people that you're training. Why don't you run us through some examples of times that you have trained and some different methods that you've used and had to use for this training?
So training, it's funny that you mentioned that because training typically, and I'm going to approach the question from looking at training an intern. So someone that is going to be within the IT department on the IT staff, not training the client, but training, teammates. A lot of it just stems from leadership, right? Like training is a leadership thing. It starts at C-suite, then it comes to like management, however your organization is laid out. And a lot of times I think what gets in the way of training the most is just ego, right? We're in a very fast-paced business, and the nature of our business is constant learning and constant growth. Like you can be an expert Monday and come Wednesday, you don't know nothing. It just happens that way.
Way if you see David's entire LinkedIn page, it's nothing but certification. So he's backing this up, FYI, just so you're aware. Okay, David, keep going.
So like they and you're right that everybody is different, and I always I always look at it from like my shoes. So with my journey and my career, I just had to figure it out. I had a lot of jobs that were trial by fire. Is either make this work or you don't got a job anymore. And I'm sure like a lot of people have similar stories. And while I drew a lot of success from that, and while that has helped me, I don't really think that's the best path for people. So one of the reasons I'm passionate about training is because I didn't get it. So
That's
I'll give
fair.
a recent example. So we recently just had an intern come in. He's been with us for like 2 months, and we're going to convert him over to full time. And the guy came with us from a really, really good background, did a great interview. However, when we got him in, he actually was like less qualified than what we thought. Whatever, it happens, right? I really needed like a junior system admin. And you know, like a system admin, you're pretty much doing a little bit of everything. Like, I need you to touch a little bit of everything. I need you to understand security. I need you to understand infrastructure. We're an Azure environment. I need you to have a basic understanding of Azure and cloud and things of that nature. But I wanted to start him in front, even though I wanted him to be infrastructure and backend, I wanted to start him in front of the client and gauge his communication skills. Because if he can communicate with the client, he can communicate with the other system admin, he can communicate with me. And in the nature of things changing and the nature of like, you know, depending on the access we give him, he can flip a button and crash the whole system. Like you gotta be able to communicate and rapidly. So we just start off with like basic things. This may sound odd. I always like to start with communication and starting with empathy, right? Can you put yourself in the client's shoes? Can you understand it? I always start off with what's called the three A's, and I learned this very early in my career, is acknowledge, align, and assure. Like learn how to communicate with this in any conversation, and everything will go well. Like that is always my starting point in communicating that way. So
So
that,
give us the dive into that real quick. What each one of those three A's mean?
yeah. So I actually learned this from Apple. So like I started my career at Apple. I was a sales guy, then I was a genius, like you know, pretentious title, like, but I still didn't know anything.
David, once a genius, always a genius. Okay. So don't say I was one. I am a genius. Just keep doing that.
Fair enough. They actually taught us this. So the three A's is acknowledge, align, and assure, right? Acknowledge the problem. Like somebody's telling you something is wrong. You can do this like in your relationship, girlfriend, wife, husband, whomever, like acknowledge it. Like they tell you that the keyboard is broken, like, okay, it seems that we're having some issues with the keyboard. Like just spit back what they said. Active listening, right? Like just say it back so they understand you're listening. And then align. Aligning is pretty much just empathy streamlined. Like put yourself in there. So spit out a situation that lets that de-escalates the person. Cause most time, you know, if you're talking to like a tier one, tier two, like help desk guy, right? You're getting angry people. Like they're only talking to you because something's wrong. So you gotta know how to de-escalate. So, okay, I see that your keyboard broke. I can get why that'd be frustrating. You know, we all got work to do and you can't really do work without your keyboard. You align with them super quick. In like two sentences, you've acknowledged the issue, you've de-escalated them, and then assure. Now assure is really, really nice because you're not assuring them you're gonna give them the solution they want. And I think that's where most people make mistakes. Because end users have no idea what the right solution is. I'm sure we both very easily know that. You're assuring them that a solution will be found and there'll be options given for that solution. So like with that, it lets them know something's gonna come out of it. And then there's like more follow-up to that. Like don't just give one, always give people options. Cause if you give people options and you let them choose, it lets them feel like they're in control. If the end user feels like they're in control, even if you know it's the right solution, they'll think they thought of it and you know, you end up winning. Like it's a whole psychology on how to talk and communicate and de-escalate. And like I said, I came from Apple. Like they taught us this. Like Apple was very, very good in like communication first, technology second. They would always say, we can't give you people skills, but we can teach you how to be a technician. And I've just carried that throughout my career.
Attention, all of my IT leaders who don't know a lot about telecom. Many of you are still managing a pile of junk and you've inherited a telecom silo. I call it a telecom time bomb. Many of us are ignoring it because the enormity of tasks surrounding a phone system replacement is overwhelming, and there's a constant barrage of direct sales reps trying to get you into a new UCaaS system today. And the whole process ends up being filled with an unforeseen comedy of errors. However, for those of you tackling such a task, you must answer, number one, are you going to go Microsoft Teams, or are you going to do something else? If it is Teams, then there's only three ways to do it, and the worst way is by just clicking the button and paying that expensive voice-enabling Teams button in your CSP's portal or asking them to do it for you. Okay, so you're not 100% sold on Teams yet because your company has a unique group of end users. Good for you for caring. Then you may be wondering, and you need to answer all of these questions. Which platforms and interfaces have easy to self-manage portals, GUIs, so that you can make moves, ads, and changes on the fly? Which platforms are the most upgradable and have functioning APIs? Who will truly interoperate with your systems? Who's going to give you free equipment and headsets, of course, and be the most cost-effective? Who's going to support your team the best with fast technical support in minutes, not days? And who's going to meet your compliancy requirements now and in the future with flexible user licensing? How about network preparation, ensuring quality of service and properly layering voice applications? How do you confidently ensure a smooth cutover and avoid going in with your fingers crossed? How do you negotiate all the legal ramifications, FCC regulated SLAs that affect your terms and conditions? Things like elasticity clauses and out of contracts if they fail to deliver. How do you know what your end users are thinking and how to deal with explaining technical to people 1,000 times that don't know how to do a transfer? And even if you have all this down, what do you do if you have limited time to research, evaluate, and confidently plan a network communications upgrade that will surely impress your key stakeholders with return on investment, CapEx, OpEx, all of this stuff? Evaluate and where do you get started in an ocean of vendors? Which provider mix is going to best fit your company's culture versus just asking your peers who they use or shopping VoIP.com or Googling who's the best, and then you've got all kinds of people showing up in your inbox. This is why this is the classic put-off project where no one wants to take on the planning from start to finish, everything from auditing bills to surveying staff, researching providers, sifting through information, meeting with vendors, requesting proposals, ensuring all the effective transition without outages, and managing all of the negative Nancy naysayers who are surely going to complain about the new phone system. Let me and my special team of telecom nerds give you all of the rollout maps, RFP grids, and hold you by the hand for free and even pit providers against them and give you all of the data information on what the lowest pricing has ever been with benchmark level pricing. Everything from seeing how far you can throw those old phone systems to every detail you need surrounding Microsoft Teams integrations or all of the best UCaaS providers with custom and in and out of the box APIs. Also, some of you are dealing with who's the best fit contact center software providers for your unique group of end users and agents and staff. How can you leverage AI software to drastically increase agent efficiency? And let's not forget about workforce management tools to ensure proper staffing, all while avoiding annoying meetings and sales reps telling you it's the end of the month, President's Day specials. All you need to do is email telecom@popularit.net and we will give you all of the information, everything you need, and hold you by the hand for free. And if you like the information, great, do whatever you want with it. And if not, you can tell us to go pound sand.
Yeah, that, you know, it's interesting because I always thought kind of the same thing when it comes to hiring folks and stuff, which is I always look for the ethics. I look for the personality. I look for that. And even if they're lacking on technical, I feel like, okay, as long as I know where they're lacking, we can train them up. Right. So, yeah. And we can give them some development in that regards. Right. So, and it is, you can teach tech easier than you can teach, work ethic and certainly the personality skills and the ability to kind of communicate. Gosh, communication is such a big deal. It's tough. It's tough and easy, right? Because we have AI to help us out a little bit, right?
Yes.
Now, and certainly that has become a little bit easier to communicate with folks, but it's also become harder, right? Because, you know, if you just take AI and let it write things for you, right, I think what you kind of stated is the second A there, right? That ability to empathize with somebody and talk to them on a human level, it does pull that out, right? It's not genuine. It's not, it sounds formal and great, but it doesn't pull the same human strings. It's just you can almost tell that it's found a pattern and just put it there, you know. That's how I know that, you know, AI has not moved into sentience, kind of like your chair at the moment. But I feel like that communication is still, even though it's gotten a little easier to communicate harder messages, you still got to communicate them in the right way, right? How do you communicate in your career? How do you take messages that may be very difficult? And it could be technically difficult, or they could be just difficult to explain the process, right? And how do you break them down and make maybe end users or even colleagues or even maybe even the C-suite? How do you break that down and make that an easier pill to swallow?
Every situation is slightly different, but I'm, you know, I'm a country boy. Like, I come from the middle of nowhere, Virginia, and as country people do, like, just got lots of like random sayings, and we love analogies. So like, I use that a lot. Like, I'll quickly compare, I don't know, a server to a kitchen, because every day people are in a kitchen. They understand a kitchen. You say server, and you know, people get like,
oh, okay, please elaborate on the server kitchen example. You've put it out there, so I need to understand the server kitchen analogy.
I mean, I'm trying to think of one on the fly. Okay. Like just basics, right? So let's think about basics. Like a server is like a big computer if you're explaining it to like a layman, right? So yeah. people don't understand the difference between like RAM and storage. So I use a kitchen for that. Like if you are in a kitchen, like your storage is your cabinet space. You go get groceries, you can get as many groceries as you can fit in your cabinet. However, like your RAM are the burners on the stove. If you have four burners, you can cook four things at once and multitask. If you have eight, you can cook eight things. However, if you got four burners and you're trying to cook seven things, we might run into some issues. And then, you know, your processor is the actual chef. Like, how fast can he move? How skilled is, like, so, you know, like, for like me and you, like, that level of detail isn't necessary. If you say RAM, I got you instantly.
Is the cash like the sous chef?
The cash is probably more so like if you got an apron and got like pockets in the apron, like you can quickly. This is a fan. But see, but now it's more fun and engaging, and like, you know, this I it's little stuff like that, right? Like, or you can do cars. Like, you just got to find something that's relatable. And the nice thing is, like, I know we tend to be like remote now, but even just looking at somebody's like background, and if you see that they have a bunch of sports memorabilia, like, try to relate it to sports. If they have a bunch of like cars, try to like relate. So, like, I myself am not a specialist. I'm not fantastic at networking. I'm not fantastic at cybersecurity. I'm a very, very good generalist. I know a little about a lot. And because of that, it helps me communicate better. Like, so yeah.
You know, the fun part is about, you bring up a good example, actually, which is interesting, because in IT, you can specialize, right? And you can say, I'm going to go all cybersecurity. I'm going to go storage. I'm going to go, you know, all these different, and there's so many to do. Or you can be like, I'm just going to dabble in all of it, right? And be able to be a generalist, and which is a tough thing to be. And totally needed, because sometimes you need to wear multiple hats and move around. I think it's a really, really good point you bring up from a general standpoint. If you're talking about communication, if you're talking about training, right? Being able to adapt quickly and change and be able to move from one thing to another, and also be able to train and communicate that to others is a great skill to have, right? I want to talk for a second about this, because I thought it was pretty interesting. You had a post about hybrid work. Yeah. Speaking of adaptability, right?
Yeah.
And you outlined your day, you know, on there, and the differences of it, and actually put some notes about why hybrid work matters, right? I thought it was really interesting, and you know, I wanted to take a moment, because This has been an interesting kind of back and forth in a lot of different places. You know, people were like remote work during COVID, right?
Yeah.
And then other people were like, hey, we're going to do, you got to come back in the office post COVID. Everyone's coming back in the office, right? And then and then it seems like, you know, this back and forth thing is almost settled in some form of fashion, most people in some type of a hybrid form, right? What is your view on this hybrid work? Because I'm, you know, I see the posts, but what's your view on this?
So to actually preface this, which something that I think is funny, but maybe it's not funny. I actually made that post because I was curious if the HR department at my job was like watching my LinkedIn. That doesn't mean it wasn't like genuine, like I meant what it was, but it was just to see it, like if I'm being monitored. I don't know if anybody else has done something like that before, but I don't know, I find that funny. But so for me, right, hybrid work is very important. I'm gonna give like three quick reasons and then I'll kind of elaborate. I think hybrid work is important because you get a bigger talent pool to reach from, right? Where like before, like you probably want somebody within maybe like a 50-mile, 25-mile radius because you got, I'm in the DC area, so we have traffic. Like you want somebody who can get to the office. That's a limitation and a barrier right there. Are they located in a way that they can get to the office and get there on time? With hybrid, that's not so much as an issue. Bigger pool to pull from. I also think that it involves a better skill set to be able to work hybrid than to sit in an office. Like the type of people you need to look for if you know that you're going to have hybrid and you know you're not going to monitor, you need people who are, you know, it's what all the freaking things say, but they're self-starters. They can work without little supervision. They don't need to be micromanaged, you know. Every time you look at a job post, they say those things, but I don't know how they actually gauge it. And then third, like I think it makes me want to stay at the company I'm at longer. So it's retention. I like to talk about retention a lot. It's something I talk about with my C-suite and my leadership because, you know, IT typically has very short retention. Like I bring somebody on my team, I don't really expect them to be there for more than 2 years. And it's not because I don't think we have an amazing opportunity. It's not because we're not paying them. It's just that like, it's just kind of the nature of the roles and the environments. So the post though, I'll get back to that. So I'm married. I've been married for 11 years, a beautiful, beautiful woman. And we have two kids. I want to say the day I made the post, I think my wife was sick and the kids had like dentist appointments and like, that's an instant like monkey wrench, right? Like,
yep.
I know I'm gonna work remote. I'm gonna get on my computer. I'm gonna start doing things. But now, like, you know, she's sick and she could have saw it through. Like, it would have been harder for her, but she could have took them and been sick. And like, but because like I'm hybrid, I was able to say, you know what, baby, I got it. You stay home, you take care of yourself. So, you know, brownie points for me. I got my wife happy. I'll take those any day. I got to take the kids to the dentist, and I think that may have been like a 3-hour ordeal-ish. And then I got home, and I think I got home before like 11. So did it put me behind? Yeah, a little bit. Like normally I'm on my computer at like 7:30, 8 o'clock, and I didn't touch it. But there were no fires, luckily. And I have Outlook and Teams on my phone. So while they were at their dentist appointment, I think I sent a couple team messages out, let my team know what's going on. But I also had a fantastic team that, like, if I'm not at my computer and present, like, I can pass something to them. Like, hey, this just came through. Can you do this for me real quick? And that's a whole nother conversation, is building people who can pick up Slack and building that
team. That jumps back to your training and development skills.
Exactly.
Right.
So it just worked. And so I got home and when I got home, my wife said she had the kids from there. My daughter's only like 2. So her nap time is like 11:30-ish noon. So as soon as I got home, it was around her nap time and I just started working. And I mean, I tend to stay on my computer late anyway. Like, there are nights I'm working till like 10 p.m. just, you know, nature of the job. We got to roll out or something like that. So it's not like I'm cheating the books or I'm like leaving early or like, you know, not doing work. It's just I chose to do it at a different time. Work, like the work-life balance and the piece of that, like, you know, like you hate to play devil's advocate, but what if my wife took him out and because she was sick and because she was like lightheaded, she got in a car crash. Now my day is even worse than what it would have been if I just took it over. So that ease of mind and that ability to pivot and move around and just still keep everybody happy. So it just works. Like in my current position, there is not an immediate need for me to be in the office. Granted, there are times I do need to be in the office. Like one of our conference rooms went out this week. So I had to go in and physically like fix it, you know, take the TV off the wall, redo cable wiring, like, you know, no grunt work. But typically speaking, I can go in the office one day a week and it still works like a well-oiled machine. And I think a lot of people, that's what you want to get to, right? You want to automate certain tasks. You want to do certain things so that one nice thing about IT is if you actually are good at it, you can actually make your life easier. If everything is manual and hard, that's true. You're not good at your job.
Yeah. The quieter, the better, right? So yeah. It's, hey, why do we need IT? Well, the reason you need IT is because I've been keeping it quiet. So,
yeah,
you know, it's actually really funny. I've had this conversation before with executives because the better you do, the more they question why they need you. Right. Yeah. And so. You know, what I've had to do is actually say, okay, well, you should understand what is making it so that we can keep it this way, right? And yeah. And then I start, you know, kind of establishing, hey, here is all the items that I do and that my team does that keep you, you know, stable and secure and stuff like that. So if you just stopped doing all these things, right? Sure. Day one, day two, up to maybe day 30, you'd be fine. Maybe, right? Yeah. But after that, you'd start to feel it, right? And then you'd start to really feel that not having updates pushed out, not having your stuff monitored, not having the adequate security protections, not keeping on keeping in touch with the business and making sure you're staying on top of what they need. All of these items are things that the team does. How do you communicate out to the, your executives and make sure they understand my team and me, we're doing a great job, but I know it's quiet, but we're doing a great job.
Yeah, it's such a good point. It really, really is. And even with the training and development, like one thing, like we're a small team. So it's myself. I got one system admin senior, whatever you want to call them. We just bring it on a junior system admin. And then we have a tier two help desk guy. So the C-suite is encouraging me to be less hands-on, which is painful. So really it's three guys actively doing the things and me supposed to be overseeing and not doing it.
And they're right. You're going to need to have to be less hands-on. Yep.
Yeah. So one thing we talk about, and this, I especially talk about this with my system admin, is that like every day you got to justify your job because every day they want to fire you. Because we know IT is a spend. We don't bring in revenue. Yes, we can justify that we saved the company X amount of dollars, but we're not actively bringing in money. So whenever it comes time to look at budgets and to clear up pay space, they always try to start with us. Like, do you really need this amount of people? We're already a small team, so I'm always shocked that, like, you know, they want to try to pick on us anyway. But I think it's to your point, right? Even though, like, I can translate things and I can make things easier, I think those call for the times for the boring detail answers. Like, this is everything we did this week. This is everything we coming up. One thing I try to do for my C-suite is have projects posted two quarters ahead. So like we're already in Q3, but I already have plans for Q4 and Q1. So like whenever these conversations come up, I can point to a project and be like, well, I won't be able to finish this if we let such and such go, because this is what they do on a day to day. I won't be able to do this. And like, this is why X is important. And if you end up letting this person go, we're going to have to spend more money, because like one thing I always like to do is I like to compare it. I say, we can either buy a software or a vendor, or we can hire a body. Like, which one do you prefer? Because I'm sure, you know, thousands and thousands of vendors to pick from, and they're all designed to replace staff. However, with convenience come certain sacrifices. Like, if you want a custom solution and you want it to fit the culture and you want people to speak and talk to the culture, where I'm at, that's what they want. Software and vendors don't accomplish that. So they actually want physical bodies based on what leadership's vision is. So I just articulate their vision back to them. This is the vision of the company. This is where you tell me you want to go. We can only get there with bodies. If you want to sacrifice the vision and change the vision, we can go vendor and software. However, we're still spending money. Like, it's $100,000 either way. We can pay $100,000 for this vendor, or we can give it to a guy, have it his salary, and you actually get more than just the one thing. So it's just nonstop conversation, really.
It's interesting. The you talk about, you know, having software or having a person. And one of the things about third-party software is that there are other companies out there using it. So if you use third-party software, what you actually, and it doesn't happen to everything. I mean, you're going to have to use third-party software for different things. But, yeah. And I would put the asterisk here, if you have customizable third-party software, it's a different story. But if you're using third-party software, you're actually losing a competitive advantage. So you're just doing what everyone else is doing. And so you can't be marketably better than other people. Because, you know, the true trick in the trade here is the processes that you have in place in the company to make yourself more productive and have better customer service or whatever the different goals of your company are. So that's how you make your competitive advantage. That's how you stick out. I actually done a podcast prior to this about it was on the same podcast. I was a guest, and it was about not treating IT as a cost center, right? And the reason for that was, I had so many people coming up and saying, hey, we need you to cut this and cut this and cut this and cut this. Yeah. And I was like, I just turned around and I said, I'd go out to the CFO and I'd say, yeah, I'll tell you what, how about you show me everybody's, operational costs, and I help you cut the overall company's costs. Right. And what happened is I would find multiple places where there could be synergies, where you could say, you'd be like, this, they're using this software, and this, they all do the same thing. You're paying multiple.
I have that exact problem right now, yeah, where I'm getting rid of software because we have three software that do the same function. So I actually went to leadership and I said, what kind of company are we? Are we the kind of company that says, this is how we do it, and when we hire people, we let them know this is our software? Or do we say, it's a la carte, you can pick whatever you want, but now we got a $300,000 expenditure because we want to let everyone be happy and get, we have three people using this one vendor and paying $50,000. Like, what? Like, it's, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I'm literally having exact conversation.
You're absolutely right. So in that regard, IT is, first of all, helping you save money from the organization, from overall the organization. So no, right now they're not a cost center, because now they're actually a strategically helping you save money within the company. On top of that too, they can help optimize workflows throughout the entire environment. If there's anything that IT is good at is optimizing workflows and pointing out processes that could be better, right? Why are you doing it that way? Why wouldn't you just do this, right? So in changing the methodology to say, hey, let us take a look at some of these workflows you have, these processes you have in place, and let's optimize these things, right? you can now, now you've got more productivity. So again, now you're leveraging IT and only to save you money, but also to improve your processes. So that's two things right there, right? And I can keep going. So many things that IT can do if the C-levels will harness it, right? If you don't have IT, and this is for any business leaders listening out there, if you don't have IT looking at your operational costs and trying to get them reduced overall for the entire company, you're losing out because we're going to figure it out there. And the second thing is, if you don't have IT looking at your processes from your other groups and trying to improve them, you're losing out, man.
And then to piggyback on like some on what we were talking about earlier and kind of how it all mingles and mixes together, and I can't take full credit. This is something I learned from my mentor, Harold Petz, is that in the company I'm at now, they were with an MSP. Didn't like the MSP. They wanted internal IT. So Harold came in and he started it. And then I picked it up and I'm finishing it. He got everybody on my team started as an intern. So when you do that, you give them intern pay and then you train them up. So to a degree, they are slightly underpaid, but these are a lot of people who, and when I say underpaid, I don't mean like we're trying to get over on them. It's more like, think traditional, like apprenticeship. Like, you know, you don't see
in the way of they're getting, exactly. They're getting experience. Rather than the money. I mean, there's the trade-off. There's always a trade-off there.
So even from a salary standpoint, we are getting fantastic value. Like what we're getting out of these guys for what we're paying for is huge cost savings. And I had this conversation with the CFO, like, all right, some of these guys have been here for like a year, 2 years. We have to start paying them what they worth. And when we have conversations about what they're actually worth, it's an eye-opener. But that's a benefit to being able to train and develop raw talent. You can get 2 years. I like sports, right? We're trying to get a Super Bowl on a rookie contract, baby. That's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, and it, you know, and that it's interesting too. I mean, you have to invest in that. There's you bring somebody in that doesn't have the skill set, and then you train them to have the skill set. Why would you let them walk? Right? You just train them. You just train them on everything you need to train them. You made them be an expert. Don't let them walk to another company because there's two reasons for that. One, they're trained on all the things that you need, right?
Exactly.
Your way and your processes. And two, they're going to go to another company.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want that walking off to a competitor, right? Again, you're losing the competitive advantage there. So, yeah, that's a great point on that. I like that.
So that's good. And you know, that's an interesting C-suite conversation in and of itself, like, do you let talent walk? Because then you're going to spend a bunch of money trying to interview, hire. And, you know, that's a different conversation, different day.
Yeah, you don't let talent walk. You don't let talent, you don't let talent ever think it needs to walk. Right? Because when you let talent walk, it's already too late.
Yeah.
You can't let talent think that it has to, talent should always be engaged. They should always be given what they need. And by the way, it's not always money, right? Keep in mind, people are all different, you know? And you had mentioned empathy, right? For folks and a family, it's about, you know, I mean, listen, it's about, we're all getting paid to do it. So it's a little bit about money, but, sometimes it's more about, and I've seen people make this thing, you know, I could go here and I can make more money, but then I'd be working so many hours, I won't have to be a spend it with my kid. Right.
Yeah.
And I won't be able to help my wife out when she's got a problem and I need to take my kids to the dentist. Right. That these are the items that some people, you know, it matters more to them. Right. And so it's not always about money. It's actually really important to look at your staff and identify what's important to them and have those conversations and talk to them about it so that you understand when time comes that you're making sure that they're getting exactly what they need. Some people, it's like learning. Like, you know, once they hit that model of like, I'm not going to learn anymore, they decide to update their resume and move. So. Yeah. It is definitely an interesting thought process on retention. Retention is And you're probably doing something really great here with the training and development, because I know those folks coming in want and are hungry to be trained up, to be developed, to get those things. And that's huge. You don't want to put somebody in. I think you nailed it when you said this. You know, you were put in a position where you just had to figure it out. You know, I think I got a good term, fake it till you make it. Right. To a degree, sometimes as IT folk, we need to do that sometimes, you know. There's so much change. There's so much stuff. I mean, you know, we're constantly researching, but we can't know it all. But I do think that being able to explain and have and have those conversations with good communication and good training and stuff like that, you're able to get people to where they need to go. So I'm glad, you know. I'm sorry to hear that you kind of were given that little not given enough training, but I think maybe that was by design, so you could be implement better training and stuff for your folks and learn that way. So I'm actually glad that that's the way you took it and that you were able to get that moving. I want to take a minute. There's a couple things that that pop out here, and I want to kind of move into the IT crystal ball, which is our last segment, and it always focuses on the future of IT. But I actually wanted to spend a little more time than I used to on this one. But I actually want to spend more time because there's a couple different things I want to talk about with you in regards to where we're going. Right. The first thing I want to do is I want to talk about training and development, and I want to talk about where you see training development going in the next 5 years. There's so much right now that's already happening because folks were able to sit there and, you know, pop into AI and be able to kind of learn stuff on the fly, whether it's right or not, it's a whole different story. But you know, they're able to at least get some information and start going there a lot more than they were just a few years ago. So where do you see training and development going?
So I think for training and development, I think it'll be different because there's a lot of nuance within the industry. Like for me in my role, I'm providing like the IT services for a company. So, you know, we're doing networking, cybersecurity, help desk, like, so it's generally like everything. I think the fundamentals are changing, right? Like I've been in IT for like 10 years. So like when I came in, I think you can know a lot less starting than what you can now. And you know, you have those good resources that are supposed to be like key indicators. Like if somebody has like their CompTIA A+, that's supposed to mean like, oh, they know the fundamentals. But like, no, like honestly now, like you almost need to know scripting just starting. The bar is a lot higher for entry. And plus, like, you know, with YouTube and podcasts and everyone talking, like a lot of people want to get into IT because they think it is a very big paycheck in a short period of time. But that comes with a lot of knowledge. And to your point, like fake it till you make it, like you can get AI to type up this bomb resume, fake your way through an interview and get there day one. And like, I don't know, you don't know how to troubleshoot a printer. The cost of entry is a lot higher. So when you talk about training and development, I think you have to start there. Like what is the current cost to entry? Because when I think cost of entry, I think tier one. Like I got to pick up a winter intern, right? So I'm actively doing this right now. I need like one of my guys is going to go on paternity leave. Very happy for him. Going to have his first kid.
But I'm going to miss him. Yeah.
So I'll probably step into his role, but I just need somebody to like monitor the ticket queue and like watch the day-to-day stuff, right? So I really need someone really good basic communication skills, because like I said, for me, I take that over technical skills any day. I need somebody who can work a ticket queue. And there are a bunch of ticket queues out there. In my opinion, that's like a common sense thing. Like you can see this ticket, you take it and claim it, put your name on it. And then you just see it to finish. Like, I like problem solvers. I don't care if you know the answer. I care how you think about it, right? Like, I want to know what you do when you don't know. I think that's more important than if you actually do. So to me, like, those are like just three quick indicators, right? Basic communication. What do you do when you don't know what to do? Because that's probably going to be 90% of your job. And how do you handle communication within the team? Like, I know we got SOPs. I know we got paperwork. Can you figure it out on your own? Like, how long does it take you to buckle and escalate? There's nothing wrong with escalating. That is what the higher tier people are there for. However, like, are you escalating as soon as you get in a ticket without trying to fail? Like, I want people who fail every single day. Like, are you comfortable failing? Once again, rambling, but like when I look at like the entry, so when I think of training and development, like those are fundamental things I'm looking for, and then I can build off that, right? Like if you give me a tier one, I know I can give them a tier two. I know I can give them a tier three, and then we can start doing some system admin stuff. Let's start looking at Microsoft Admin Center. Let's start looking at Exchange Admin Center. Let's go take a trip to the server rack. Like let's talk about Azure. And then, like, I always like to throw out, like, complimentary things when we do the training. So, like, the Microsoft got a bunch of certifications. But that, like, their basic one is, like, the AZ-900. And it's just, like, cloud fundamentals. Like, what is the cloud? What is, like, okay, like, you're telling me you're interested in this and you want to interview for it. Go get that AZ-900. Like, I get it. You got test anxiety. You don't like to do it. Go try it. Like you need a 700 to pass, you got a 650. I like that. Like, show me effort though. Like, so you know.
So I know I like how you said describe that part. So now that we have kind of those, that kind of piece defined, right? How do you see that morphing and changing in the next 5 years? You know.
It's going to be AI. Like AI is the new rush. I had to block an AI company wide today because we had our all hands meeting and somebody had downloaded an AI that was like a note taker and then it sent everybody an email after the meeting and a bunch of people freaked out because they thought it was a cyber attack and I just blocked it. So it's going to come down to how does AI play into the workforce? And I don't, do I think AI is at a point where it's going to start replacing IT jobs? No. God, no. I think
it's not there yet. There's other jobs it's taking, but it's not, it's not yet at IT, all the way. I mean, it's funny you say that because, there's so many problems with it right now. I argue with it daily and I keep telling it's messing up. It's also getting lazy. I don't know if you notice that. Do you notice it's also getting lazier?
Well, it's funny because like I've read articles that like originally they had the algorithms and they were feeding the data, but now some of the data that's being ingested is data from other AI models. So the AI is training the AI, which is what I think is making it dumb. You know, I'm not an expert, but like I think we're running out of data to give to it. But yeah,
we've run out of run. It's like it's hungry for data. But we run out. Sorry, this is all you get. I think it's getting lazy. I think it's I asked it to do something the other day, and it was like, yeah, here's how you do it. I'm like, no, I'm telling you because I want you to do it.
I think some of those like fundamental like tech jobs will always be there. You will always need a network guy. You want to get in the IT and make a bunch of money? Go learn networking. Come learn networking. You will always have a job. You might be angry and drink a little, but you'll have a job. That's not going anywhere. I think like the entry level jobs would be there, tier one to tier three. I know a lot of people don't like to stay in those because the pay doesn't reach and cost of living is getting high. The biggest impact is probably going to be at like that system admin level, right? The implementation. And I think what'll happen is you'll get a lot of vendors that'll pop up and those vendors will sell dreams like they always do because they're just salesmen. And their dreams will be built on some shitty AI. And so you'll go spend 60K for this vendor. You'll try to implement it. It'll screw up your system. You'll end up doing more maintenance, and then you'll be locked in a contract for 3 years. I think a lot of companies are going to get screwed over with that contract. But I mean, that happens anyway now without AI.
You know what I love about this segment so far with you is you have pointed out everything that's possibly wrong and where things are going to go wrong in the future, which.
Oh, sorry.
Because, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, you know, it's this cloudy vision. It's beautiful vision of the future where it's just everything's going to be great and everything like that. And then sometimes I get people in here that are like, yeah, no, that's not going to, no. It's just going to get worse. What are you talking about? It's going to cost you more money. It's going to, you know. And you know what? There's some truth to that. I think that we would be unwise to think that everything will just work and get better because this exists. And as we've already seen, AI has done a lot of things that have made things a little bit harder, right? You can now see, if you look at your newsfeed, right, you can tell the AI written articles, right? I mean, with the AI generated art, right? I mean, you're just like, oh, that's, and there's no substance to it, right? It's different. So I think
there would be a reemergence or a renaissance for a very human element in IT again, which is very funny. And of course, I'm saying this because like this is like my skill set and I excel at this. I'm hoping this happens. Because the typical, you know, the prototype is that the IT guy is like shut in the network closet. He got a bunch of wires. He can't communicate. Doesn't like to talk to people. I think with things being remote, like people not being like we're humans. We need to communicate. We need to like touch each other. Like we need to like, I think there's going to be a renaissance for a human element in IT. And I think within the next, like you said, about 5 years, like I think that is where companies are going to excel. I think people who work on those soft skills will actually have a faster career trajectory than more so focuses on the tech skills. Of course, like, you know, if you're a coder, you'll get a 300K salary and like you'll have the place. But I think because of AI, because of remote work, some companies will try to revisit how do we put the human element back in IT? And that's going to be the million-dollar question.
All right, well, I'm going to drop the mic there. Nerds, I'm Michael Moore. I've been hosting this podcast for Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I've been with David Johnson, IT manager at OTJ Architects. David, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And wow, what a fascinating ending to that discussion about training and stuff like that. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.